Welcome to this new episode of Carolyn Talks. I am your host, film critic and journalist, Carolyn Hines, and this is the podcast slash YouTube channel where I speak to film creatives around the world about their work, the industry, and what inspires them. And today is a special episode. It's a podcast episode, so there will be no video to go with this, with actor Hamza Haque and actress Anna McGuire about their new film With Love and the Major Organ, directed by Kim Albright and written by Julia Lederer. And this is a great conversation that I had with Hamza and Anna. And we spoke about love and what love means to them and also what love means to their characters, George and Annabelle. And Annabelle, she lives in a society where everyone is like trying to be the same. And I think it's also a critique of how social media is changing our culture and changing society to become less, involved with each other, you know, as we become more involved with this social media, our lives are taking place more online than in person. And the film is talking about that and how the character of Annabelle, she's still very much about being in touch with her feelings and being emotionally connected to the people around her. You know, she wears bright colors while everyone else is in muted shades. And then there's the character George, who is very reserved, and he's very he's not emotionless, but like his emotions are more repressed, you know. And so he's a character who is fully integrated into the society that it is. So first of all, thank you, Hamza. Thank you, Anna, for joining me to talk about With Love and a Major Organ. I want to first ask the both of you, it may seem like a pretty passing question, but what does love mean to each of you? And it could be romantic love, it could be eros love, friendship, you know, there's so many different forms of love, but what would you say would be your general idea of love is first?
You go first.
Love. I mean, for me, love is something that keeps growing the older I get. I think the more love and heartbreak and hate and pain one experiences, the more love I find grows. Sort of something that my mum always said. She was always like, oh, when I had you, I didn't realise I could love someone so much. And when I had your sister, I didn't even realise I could love that much more. And I feel that more and more as I get older and older. And I'll be interested to see where I end up in 20, 30 years time on that question. But it does feel like there is a constant, if you let it, love grows.
And what about you, Hamza?
I think love is, it's essentially just service, isn't it? Like, it's, you have to put work in. You do it because you have this inherent need to, almost a compulsive need to make sure that something is okay. That something, you know, like Anna said, that something grows, to dedicate yourself to anything, be it a project, the way you make your cup of coffee, a loved one, a partner, a child, anything, a movie. You know, you become connected through serving something that's
bigger than the sum of its parts,
exactly.
I guess, on some level.
Yeah, it's a, love is a tremendously collaborative concept. You know, and that's, I mean, that goes to, you know, that's self-love as well. You have to work with all of yourself, and self-love really happens when you work with all the different parts of yourself, including and almost especially the parts of yourself that you don't like, in the sense of, you know, to, with joy and full conviction, do something that you might not want to do, like, I don't know, clean up, you know what I mean? Yell at your kid. You know, do something like that. You know, you don't want to argue with these things, but because you love the thing, you have to.
So I think both of your definitions are kind of the living in the same zone. Like, for yours is like, love is expansive. It grows and it contracts, and like, you know, it can shrink depending on the situation you're in, and it can grow if, like, as you use your mom's definition, like, the more people you add into your life, the bigger your love grows. And for you, Hamza, yours is like, acts of service. Love is acts of service, you know, like doing something, and you do that because your love for whoever is in your life grows. You know, it expands and it grows, and it can contract down to like the minutiae, like just cleaning up a living room. The living room is an act of service for yourself, like cleaning for yourself. You said, I love myself, therefore I shall put my effort in to cleaning up the space that I inhabit and I live in, right? Yeah. And it's kind of ironic that you both actually came up with those explanations, because I think it kind of fits this film, because for like the characters, Annabelle, like her love, it literally grows and then it shrinks. Mm. And then to the point that it, not to spoil it, but like in a way almost disappears. Mm. But I don't think it ever truly disappears. I think it just shrank. And like, it was in a form that she couldn't recognize. And for the character of yours, George, his love was there, but he didn't know how to process it. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think in the film, like, love doesn't exist for him. He just didn't know what it was. Mm-hmm. He didn't know what form it could form.
And love is, I mean, I think on some level with the George and Mona's relationship, she loves him so much that she unwittingly or wittingly, you know, kind of harms him mm-hmm. in some way. This idea of protecting and love and those sort of complex ties.
Don't we all?
well, exactly. Yeah. I think that sort of the more we speak about the film, actually, the more I realize how complex and nuanced and it is such a study of love, but it isn't necessarily a traditional romantic love story, I think, and that's therein lies its sort of slipperiness.
I didn't see their love as romantic at first, even though I think for Annabelle she did. I kind of saw their love as being like this exploration of what it means to welcome somebody into your life just like that. Mm-hmm. You know, like openness. Annabelle, she's so open. She's like, oh wait, I think I love this man, even though we've exchanged like maybe 5 words. And it wasn't necessarily romantic love. I think it was just like, she's like, oh, this is a new form of love. You know, I can love a perfect stranger, you know? And for for George's mom, Mona, she's interesting because when the revelation, because the way how she's introduced in the film, she seems very cold and very standoffish. And like their setting is very monotone. Their life is monotone. Their life is no color. You know, and I think it's because she's so afraid of what love can do that she removed what she thought could be signs of love, mm-hmm. you know, which is color, taste, flavor. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, fish can have flavor, lady, but if you're not meeting any seasonings, it's not going to have flavor. But she removed that because she's like, because she even saw like the taste of food could lead to some kind of trouble for him. She's like, if you fall too much in love with food, like Greek, like food, like pizza, mm-hmm. she was like, this can lead to a path of trouble for you. But you can't escape love, you know, you can't escape life because that's human emotion. And the film is very interesting where like the title is With Love and a Major Organ, meaning the heart, but like love doesn't exist physically in our heart. Mm-hmm. It's a thing that is a part of us mentally, you know. Mm-hmm. I think to me, I remember a friend of mine said years ago, and it stuck with me, she's like, love is a principle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she's like, love is principle, because mm-hmm. if you go strictly on emotions, like emotions are fleeting. You can be angry one minute and like
100%,
right? And she's like, but love is emotion, is a principle, because you got to dedicate time to that. So I want the both of you to talk about the principle of love in your characters. Mm-hmm. Because I think the principle in love for Annabelle in particular is like, she does acts of service for her friend Casey, you know. Mm-hmm. That's how she shows love. That's mm-hmm. her principle, to be there for the people in her life. It's like her mom, she couldn't get through to her mom, but she kept calling because she's like, this is how I'm going to show my mom that I love her. This is my principle of love. And I think even for George, like, he didn't know who Annabelle was in his life. He didn't know what the potential was, but he was still open to her. Mm-hmm. You know, he didn't know what to call it, but he's like, you know what, like, this is someone that I could potentially let into my life. So I want you both to talk about the principle of love in your characters, because I think you're actually like really like mirror images of each other. Mm-hmm. And you go first, Hamza, because
first things first, I want to know what island nation you're from.
Barbados.
Yeah, because I'm just like, you're commenting on unseasoned fish real quick. You know what I mean?
That fish looks so black.
You could not have revealed yourself more in that moment. You're like, yeah, omega-3s are fine. Put some spice on it.
Put some cilantro. Not even cilantro, some parsley.
Anything.
Just some salt.
Yeah.
I like no. pepper. Yeah. Pepper's color, no color.
Yeah. I think, you know, this is, you know, increasingly popular saying about grief just being love with nowhere to go. Mm-hmm. and nowhere to put it. And I think that's George throughout the beginning of that, like the principle of having all that love inside. But, you know, if we think of the heart as not the container of love, but the engine by which love is exercised, and for him not to have the agency or the access to that, to do that, it just built up this sort of constant state of just, not sadness, but his total acceptance of where he is in life without complacency. You know, that's what I mean there. The complacency with what he has with his life not having flavor or color and everything like that. But there's a bravery in just being okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
He's not, he hasn't victimized himself to anything. He's not going around like, oh, woe is me and I have nowhere to put my love. He's just accepted that, like, I have a lot of love inside me and there's nothing I can do about it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. Where I find that it, when you say that there's, there, you know, Anna and George, not to speak on what Annabelle is, or sorry, Annabelle and George, not to speak on what Anna is gonna, you know, is gonna say, but we are mirror images of each other in that she has the exact same mechanism, the exact same principle of having all this love and nowhere to put it, except she has an engine that's roaring.
Mm.
And she's just sort of rapid firing it everywhere, and it's sort of just not sticking. So her, much like her paintings, it's sort of like messy and all over the place, where George, he doesn't even have color.
Mm.
So I think for when he finally receives the motor or the engine, he kind of has this influx of trying everything and giving himself to everything and being in service to, you know, whatever is around him, if that's petting the dog, if that's talking to strangers, if that's, you know, getting these, you know, vintage shirts or these thrift store, you know, you know, picking up those dinosaurs. It's just, for him, it's something that's been repressed for so long that as soon as he gets the moment, he kind of lives the, that, you know, in this zone of childlike wonder, as if he's discovered music for the first time. So, yeah, like, I think it's something that's constant in both of them, especially for George, and his lack of understanding of what exactly his grief is coming from is motivated by that exact principle of love and in seeking some kind of commitment, which is why I feel like he has all these questions for his mother in that moment, being just like, how can we never order food, or how can we never talk about feelings, or, you know what I mean? Like, we can't, and we can't just talk about it. We have to go out there. We have to live it. We have to act on it, you know. You know, love is, it's a verb, so it requires action, and finally he has the tools to act on it.
Yeah, he didn't hesitate to accept the feelings at all. Like,
no, he just looked at it, he's just like, oh, here's a heart in, you know. Yeah
and for Annabelle,
yeah, I mean, I think everything you're saying is super interesting. I think Annabelle in mirror to George is she's at the end of her tether with love. Mm. Actually, and I think this sort of the fine line between a desperate act and a loving act is something that she, that sort of that she's walking that tightrope when we meet her at the beginning of the film. And I think when George rejects her love, she in grief gives her heart, both in grief and in love, because as you said, these sort of, mm-hmm. again, mirrors. But it is also a very loving act and a very vulnerable act and a very brave act, even if it is also an act of just not being able to cope with the amount of pain that a heart can comes with, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think sort of she gives it away. It's almost like passing the baton.
Yeah.
And I think what's interesting about the sort of world where hearts are objects and they can be kind of imbued with experience or sort of talismanic in some way, she gives her heart. And part of what we did in the rehearsals was to sort of figure out our physical mannerisms and what we might, what that might be like with a heart without a heart, and what Hamza, obviously taking my cat, well, not Hamza, but George taking Annabelle's heart, you know.
One for one.
Exactly. What mannerisms or sort of qualities he might have picked up from that heart. And then obviously we follow Annabelle, and eventually, spoiler, I guess, she gets her heart back. but the thing is that what she picked up, what does she pick up from his experience with the heart, right? This object kind of it leaves her, it gives her, I think, the capacity, the strength to move into the next stage of her life. Mm. And well, we see a little bit of that, but maybe what that might mean in the future and what love might mean, it's reinterpreted by George's childlike experience of love, a love that he's never felt before. And so love actually does become quite sort of, I guess, extracted from, it becomes quite conceptual, actually, as well as active and something that both characters practice. It is a kind of musing upon love. And so your question at the beginning about what is love to you is a very welcome and very profound question, and I think quite a profound reading on your part of the film, or an accurate, or something in there.
So I think it begs the question on what you think love is.
Exactly. Yes,
I wanted to be into it. I'm like, I haven't said this in a while. I know where this is going, so I gotta ask her too.
For me, love is, I think love is believing possibilities. Because if you don't believe that there's something to look forward to love, whether it's a new family member, whether it's a spouse, a partner, getting a dog, you know, like loving, I talk to my plants. I have a dog and I have plants, and I talk to my plants and I love them. But I think love is about possibility, you know, because even if you've been hurt, you got to learn to, and it may stay with you, it may stick with you, because it doesn't really go away, because those kind of things leave marks on us. You still got to open up yourself to the possibility of love in the future, you know? Like, loving yourself is, like, looking forward to the future.
Love is hope.
Love is hope, you know? And people will say, oh, that sounds trite, but it's true, because we're as human beings, we need something to look forward to. We need to have hope, you know? We need to have a belief that when we wake up tomorrow, that there's something to look forward to in that day. And in saying that, I'm thinking about George, and I thought what I think writer Julia Lederer did really, really well is when... Even in the midst of her grief and her rejection and her anger and all of these dark feelings, Annabelle still had hope, because she gave her heart to George. She didn't keep it. She didn't put it. She didn't lock it away. She didn't destroy it. She didn't destroy it. She didn't like dash it out through the window like she was doing with the other mementos. She's like, my heart is still precious.
Yeah, and she says that as well. Exactly. She says, be careful with it.
And so she's like,
right before she says, I hope it haunts you forever.
I thought that was
so vindictive.
She's like, I hope it haunts you. But it made sense to me, because she and all of them, and it shows, like, even when she's turning off her emotions, she doesn't want to destroy the thing that makes her who she is, you know? That's her divine characteristic, her heart, her love, her trust. And she's like, I'm going to give this to somebody that I see that needs it. Right? Because I think she realized that George didn't reject her because he didn't like her, but I think she rejected George because she realized that he was missing that component.
Yeah, he just doesn't have the tools.
And he didn't have the engine, and so she gave that away. And I think that's the thing about what the film is really talking about is for Annabelle, where she's like the one bright spark in this film. Like, she's the brightest person. Like, she's always the most colorful, and she's always the most positive, and she's performing acts of service for people who don't even like her or people who don't understand her. Like Casey, I'm like, Casey, you know this girl. Like, you should have expected that she was going to do something unexpected. But I'm thinking about how in the dialogue, how that comes through, like the whole thing with the haunt, I hope it haunts you. But I think it showed like that is also just like she has this whole this sense of humor that other people wouldn't get. And I wanted to ask you both about the dialogue, because it was giving me, not Pride and Prejudice, people say Pride and Prejudice, now it was giving me Wuthering Heights. You know, it was giving me Charlotte Bronte.
It's got some dark.
And so, because the dialogue, the syntax and the structure of the dialogue is very specific. It doesn't flow evenly, you know? Like, the way you say things kind of feels like, almost like it felt very Regency era, very Victorian era. And I wanted to ask you both about the lines and reciting the dialogue, because Annabelle has a very specific way of describing her emotions. She relates a lot of it to food and cooking. And it was just like, and it was interesting because we don't really see her eat, but she talks about food a lot.
She's got a rich cooking life.
Whereas George, he eats. We see George eating, but his food has no flavor, you know? So I want to ask you first, Anna, about the dialogue and the script.
You have watched this film impeccably.
I know.
I didn't even realize that I've seen this so many times.
I'm obsessed with everything.
We should have had this conversation before we did the DVD commentary. We should have stolen all of your
DVD commentary.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, I was asking you about the dialogue because I was like, why is she talking?
talks. She talks about food and cooking and about the textures of food.
Mm. Well, like, I guess it's the texture of life, right? Yeah. It's like, what does it mean to live? It's to touch, to feel, to smell, to this all sense.
Mm. To nourish yourself. So, you know.
Yeah, and well, I think Julia, she's such a she's a brilliant writer. Mm. She comes from a theatre background, and so dialogue is her sort of bread and butter, so to speak.
It was giving that very dramatic Shakespeare, like Regency era Pride and Prejudice, Wuthering Heights, like before though, or she was, I'm like, girl, like she's ready to like be like dramatic, but like I really, the dialogue, I wasn't expecting it to be phrased the way it is.
Yeah, I think, well, I guess it's such a specific world, so it's quite heightened. So the world that they exist in, whilst it's sort of close to the world that we're in, I think there's something just slightly heightened, slightly to the left,
fantastical.
Yeah, or but again, I like the sort of, it's the sublime and the ridiculous that she sort of plays with. She likens herself to a lonely meatball in a vat of tomato sauce, you know, which is quite absurd, really. But yeah,
from Titus Andronicus.
Yes, yeah. No, it's from Act Two. Quite fitting, actually. Though.
I know. I just realized.
Exactly.
Tell me you're a theater nerd.
And the language actually was quite tricky, I think, on some level, to especially the recording, the tape, the poetry, because it is spoken quite freely to George, but yet nonetheless, as you say, it has got a heightened register. So it's how to make that feel authentically her without feeling like a kind of imposed narrative. And so we did a bunch of work on that. We did some rehearsals. I worked with a really great voice coach, Suzanne Saretta, who comes from sort of a theatre background as well, and just to sort of get the words into your body. You know, sometimes you need to sort of embody that language so that it feels authentic. Even if it is a slightly strange or left field.
And I think for George, it kind of I really do think like both characters are mirror images of each other, because the dialogue for George changes. His is very flat and almost monotone and almost incurious. He doesn't speak with a sense of curiosity, you know. There's no inflections to his voice. Like, even when he says, oh, I read the paper the day after, so I already know what happened. But he doesn't deliver it in, like, an excited way. He's like, I just, you know.
Here's the facts.
He's like, here's the facts. I do this. But then once he gets the hurt, the way he speaks changes. Whereas, like, for Annabelle, the same thing happens. She went from being, like, like this dramatic sense of, like, describing things to very monotone and almost robotic. And like not emotionless, not emotional, because there's a sense of resentment that I get in her performance. And like there's a sense, like when she says this, I'm like she resents that she has to speak this way. But for George, he really opens up his dialogue. He expresses his anger, and like you become very emotive and very childlike and throw a tantrum. So talk about like flipping the switch, and also in working with your director to really make sure that you don't get too over dramatic to the point where it, like the childishness becomes annoying. And I say that because the childishness has to make sense.
Yeah.
And it, you know, rather than it seems like an adult throwing a tantrum, it's more like this is a repressed child finally getting a chance to grow up.
Yeah, there's, oh God, I'm in love with your questions. This is spectacular. You know, like, sorry, like we've just spent the whole day talking about like movies, and we're talking about like the logistics of making a movie, so just to have sit down and be just talk about love for a bit. I'm just like, oh, thank God, this is such a relief, man. I feel like I've unclenched my bowels for the first time in 24 hours.
I know.
I'm like, whoa, like this is great. You know what I mean? Like,
thank you. That means a lot to me.
No, it's spectacular. Thank you. You know, and listeners, you don't need to know who else we've been interviewing. So that's yeah, I think, you know, I've got this, I've been working with the same acting coach, Michelle Lonsdale-Smith, for about 12 years. So when George came around, it was just like, okay, cool, like, we're gonna try to do something different, where you're just gonna have to sit with everything that you feel. Here's somebody who, you know, is just so okay with who he is, and he's not dramatic about it. He doesn't like it. And I am an individual who is not okay with who he is, and I'm tremendously dramatic about it. I have made an entire career trying to mask when everything is just fucking okay. I'm, you
he's
know?
Not wrong. He's
yeah.
not wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
pedophilia.
But you know what I mean? Like, we all do so much to try to mask our insecurities, where I don't think... And our insecurities come from some sort of disdain for our life experiences or parts of us that we wish we didn't have, or behaviors that we've, you know, exercised, you know, on ourselves or on other people that we really wish we hadn't, and things that we wish we could change. And George is somebody who does not wish to change anything. Mm. He's just like, it is what it is. This is who I am. So I really had to sit in that in the beginning stages of, you know, before in the pre... you know, and receiving Annabelle's heart, it was just, yeah, Janine. Before he receives Janine, yeah, he has a great name. Yeah, before he gets Janine, you know, just to really sit in there, and that was a difficult task for me, because I, you know, whatever inside work that we're all doing, you have to sit in your own vulnerability for. I'm lucky in that way that acting has saved my life so much that I am willing to do that work for a part. I hadn't even closely approached that work for a relationship, for religion, for my child even, but it was for a part. And I'm just like, I love what I do so much. So in order to be in service to that, I have to do this. So like for the 16 hours a day or however long we were on set, it was just like, buddy, you just gotta sit in that vulnerability, be constantly present. And it has changed my life in such a profound way, and it was deeply uncomfortable to do that. Working with both my coach and working with Kim, I would say that scene that George and Mona have when that argument right after he gets that hard, like something's different with you, that is 10 years of a boy's life, you know, in the sense that there, he goes from you know, toddler to teenager within that conversation. Because first it's just pure grief and he's sad, like, I don't know why I'm sad, I don't know, whatever. And then he starts asking questions, and then he starts being like, what has gotten into you? And he goes, I don't know. You know what I mean? There's that defiant teenager comes on, and then that rebellious, you know, defiant, you know, preteen, and then the rebellious teenager, and then I'm moving out. And like, you know, when he says, don't follow me, it's just like, you know, he flips that thing over. I'm just like, okay, cool. In that moment, he flips the plate over. He's 18 now. And then when he calmly says, no, I'm not sorry, don't follow me, I'm like, okay, cool. He's 21, wanting to move to the big city. You know what I mean? But it happens.
But he has to grow up that fast because he's never had that opportunity.
Yeah,
right?
So it's that thing that it is, and that was something that we explored, because I don't think we ever see it. We see one picture of like a child George versus an old picture of me, but there were so many pictures of me through like there was a couple of frames on that mantle. I think we only zoom in on the one, but it was like me throughout. You know, like I think there was a picture of me 5 and 8 and 13 and 20.
So you're confronted with yourself.
So, you know what I mean? There was like a version of the cut where I was like, who is George? And I go, is it him? Is it him? Is it him? Is it him? And it was just, those were like the versions of really just myself, and the versions of like what anybody goes through in those ages. And it was that slow progression where it was just like, okay, cool. Like, even though it happened within one scene, it made sense. Like you said, the tantrum has to make sense. So if I went from zero to never having said anything to just leaving as a calm 21-year-old, don't follow me, mom, it wouldn't have made sense. So you kind of have to go through the gauntlet of everything. And then you see, you know, the same mistakes that we make when, you know, we fall in love too quick, and, you know, this, you know, a pretty girl picks you up, and you end up in bed together, and then you tell her that you're in love, and then you have lice, and you end up, wait, just me? but you know what I mean?
I know,
like,
what kind of life you've been living.
Yeah, you know what I mean? The life of an actor. No, but it was just an excellent exercise in examining oneself, and to do it in a guided sandbox that Julia and Kim created, and to get to do that with another actor who you trust so much, and who's not afraid to get immediately vulnerable with you and help you through that, and hold your hand and give you her heart and receive yours. It was really cool. It was a I mentioned this earlier in another interview, but I will always look at my career in terms of before and after with London Major Organ.
All right. Thank you so much, both of you, for talking with me and such, and having and being so open with your answers and everything. Thank you so much
for your really wonderful and prescient and thoughtful questions. I really appreciate it.
That was great. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
So everyone, that was this episode of Carolina Talks, and in this episode, I spoke with the actor Hamza Haq and actress Anna Maguire about their film With Love and a Major Organ, which is being released into Canadian theaters April 10th, which is the day that I'm publishing this. So I really hope you enjoyed this interview. It was really good to talk to them. And we weren't able to record the session, but that was fine. You'll see, like, if you watch it, if you go on the YouTube channel, you'll see, like, I put up clips of the film instead. But I really enjoyed them taking the time to speak with me, and it was great to talk to them in person because I don't normally get to interview people in person if it's not festival oriented. So it was great to talk to them in person as well. And you can find this and other episodes, of course, on and you'll of course find other interviews with film creators around the world on Carolina Talks podcast. And so here's what happened. As you've noticed, I've kind of changed up the title for it because since it's now more my podcast, and so here's what happened. So it's now the Carolina Talks podcast. And if you go on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/@Carolina_Hines, you'll see that it's changed to Carolina Talks podcast and YouTube channel, but it's still the same. I just changed up the title a little bit, you know, help with SEO, help people find it a bit easier. And you'll see, of course, other interviews that I did for AFCA virtual roundtables, for the Toronto International Film Festival, Sundance, South by Southwest. If you go to my R3 page, that's authory.com, you'll find all of my published work there as well. And if you go to kcrush.com and go and look in filmmaker interviews, you'll see interviews that I've done for the Busan International Short Film Festival, the Busan International Film Festival, Jeonju Film Festival, and other festival coverage that I've done for Kcrush as well. And on social media, I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Carrie CNH12, that's CARRIECNH12. Find links to my work there, and on Twitter, you'll see me talking about all kinds of stuff, not just films. And of course, politics now, you know, pro-Palestine, yeah, free Palestine, Congo genocide, like pay attention to those kind of things, and like what's going on in Haiti and Congo and Sudan. And I try to make my social media as representative of who I am as a person. So I talk about a whole range of things. And that's the way to get to know me as well. And I think that's important, you know, like who I am as a person is influenced by my work as a film critic and a journalist. And my work as a film critic and journalist is influenced by who I am as a person. So there's that. But until the next episode of Carolina Talks, everyone, stay safe. Bye.